with Dr. Keith Suter.
With Donald Trump's victory in the 2024 US presidential election, global attention has once again turned to the potential implications for Australia. While Trump's first term was marked by a tough stance on trade, defence and international relations, his return to power raises new questions about the future of the US-Australia alliance and a broader global order. From trade wars to military partnerships, Australia's strategic interests are deeply intertwined with decisions that are made in Washington. This morning, Dr. Keith Suter from Global Directions joins me to unpack what Donald Trump's re-election means for Australia, both in terms of the economy and foreign policy. We'll have a look at how Australian leaders will navigate a relationship with a US administration known for its unpredictability and explore the possible challenges and opportunities that lie ahead in this new era of US leadership. Good morning, Dr. Keith Suter.
Yes, good morning, Brent.
Keith, given Donald Trump's re-election, what do you think Trump's victory means for the US-Australia alliance, especially in terms of defence and trade?
Well, two separate issues there. I think in regard to defence, it's likely, not certain, but likely that Trump will continue with what's called the AUKUS agreement. So it's the agreement between Australia, the United Kingdom and the United States. So that was negotiated between Biden and Morrison and Boris Johnson in the UK. And I think that that treaty will remain, even though Trump is trying to pull out of involvement in international affairs. He is certainly very hostile to China and wants to make America great again, which means that he cannot allow China to become great again. So I think that the military aspect will certainly appeal to Trump. So I think that that agreement will probably hold, even though there are people in all three countries have got doubts about it. On trade, it's a much more complicated situation because the United States has a huge trade deficit when it comes to China. But, of course, Australia has a huge trade surplus. The Chinese buy our raw materials, which they then manufacture into items, which they then sell into the United States. Donald Trump is threatening to impose tariffs on the imported items coming in from China and indeed from the rest of the world. So the first issue is, will it affect us? We were able to negotiate a few exclusions last time he was in the White House. We will be able to do that again, so to avoid some of that damage from the increased tariffs. But also, of course, it'll be the bigger issue, the wider disruption to international trade. And that's what's worrying a lot of people, because we could go back to the 1930s when countries started to impose tariffs on imported items. I might just explain. A tariff is a tax. So when, for example, the United States imports something from China, it's actually saying there's a tax on that item. So the reasoning is that if you put a tax on the imported item, it gives a financial incentive for Americans to buy their own locally produced items. Now, that assumes that America is able to produce those locally produced items. Some people have said, well, America has now lost so much of its industrial base, it won't be able to produce things anyway. And so it'll simply end up anyway with Americans paying more because of all the tax on the imported items. So there are going to be real complications, I think, with Trump trying to impose tariffs, both because of domestic opposition, because it will add to inflation, but also because of what it will do to international trading arrangements. One theme that we've seen since World War II, so we're now going back 80 years, one theme has been countries negotiating to reduce tariffs, not to impose them. And so Trump is trying to put the clock back to where we were in the 1930s, and those tariff wars actually extended the period of the Great Depression. So there'll be some overseas governments, including Australia, who will be saying to the Americans, don't impose so many tariffs because we don't want to slow down international trade.
How might Trump's America First policies impact Australia's relationship with China?
Well, that's exactly the worry, of course, because we do very well out of trade with China. China is always on the lookout for other suppliers of raw materials. But at the moment, Australia is riding high because we're seen as a reliable supplier. China will be able to get more material out of Africa, but it's a risky proposition. You know, you hear of these Chinese miners who are getting killed in Africa. Now, that never happens in Australia. We don't go around killing foreigners. So we are still a very safe supplier of items to China. But if China is obliged not to be able to produce as much stuff for the American market, then China will stop importing so much of Australia's raw materials because they're not going to be able to sell whatever they produce. So that will have a knock-on effect. And of course, our producers in the mining sector have done so well out of China, but there may be a bit of a question mark over that future arrangement.
Trump has told us in the lead-up to the election, any opportunity that he gets, he's going to fix the wars. Your thoughts on that? Do you believe he will be able to achieve that result?
Well, it's going to be very difficult because it takes two to fight a war. And if you've got both sides determined to keep fighting, either in Gaza or Ukraine, then it's very difficult for the Americans to try to impose a peace settlement on one side or the other. In the case of Israel, the Americans have very little leverage over Israel. That's a good example of the way in which all politics is local, because at the end of the day, the Netanyahu government is not going to risk alienating its far-right supporters by doing some sort of peace deal. So although Trump might be saying he wants to have peace in the Middle East, there'd be hardliners in the Israeli government who would say, no, we want to continue the fight against Hamas, against Hezbollah, and perhaps even Iran itself. In the case of Ukraine, even more complicated, because I've noticed that there was a conversation yesterday between President-elect Trump and the Ukrainian leader, in which Elon Musk also sat. And Elon Musk is an interesting figure because he has trade links with Russia, but he's also supplying the basic technology that the Ukrainians are using in order to fight their war. So Musk is in a very interesting situation. I don't see how Trump will be able to win that war in 24 hours. I know he's promised to do so. It could certainly cut off American aid to Ukraine, but the Ukrainians may well just be continuing to fight Russians with what limited help they can get from European countries. And of course, the new dimension here also will be the role of South Korea, because North Korea is now supplying troops to Russia to help the Russian campaign in Ukraine. That gives the excuse to South Korea to perhaps supply sophisticated military equipment and perhaps eventually even troops to fight off the Russians. So it's going to be an interesting issue. So we now have an Asian dimension to this European conflict. So Trump may like to see people, you know, stop the fighting, but I think he's going to find it difficult to do so.
You mentioned Elon Musk. Elon Musk is heading up the Department of Government Efficiency and has already said he can save $2 trillion. But economists are saying if Donald Trump goes through with all the policies that he's spoken about, it could send the US broke. Elon Musk, though, was no fool, and he is the richest man in the world, Keith.
Yeah, he is. And he always plays a very complicated game. Remember, he's the one who's got electronic vehicles, which were sponsored by the previous administration. And he's turned against those people. So it's interesting. There's no real consistency with Elon Musk. But Trump's problem is that he's made so many promises to so many different demographic groups in the United States, he's going to end up offending some people. Now, the obvious place to cut back in the United States would be healthcare and pensions, over which America, the government, does have very clear control. But that, of course, will really anger his older and sicker supporters. So he can't do that. And of course, Trump's promised tax cuts will lead to a problem of an even greater deficit. Remember, last time around, he introduced huge tax cuts, particularly for the wealthy, and that added to the American debt. Neither candidate, let me say, neither Trump nor Harris produced any evidence that they were going to be willing to take on the debt problem. So America is increasingly getting into debt. Now, America can afford to pay the debt, but it means that it's having to repay it rather than spending on other matters. And so it's going to be a real problem for whoever was going to be president, because obviously you can't afford to offend the elderly and the sick in the United States, or the military. Cut back on military expenditure, for example. That would also save a lot of money for the government, but that would annoy a lot of people as well.
Were you surprised by the size of his victory? Because no one predicted it. The polls, they got it completely wrong. No.
Well, of course, as you know, last week I was being guided by Professor Alan Lichtman, who's guessed the outcome correctly for the last 40 years. So Alan Lichtman is now having to do media interviews explaining why he went so wrong. So, yes, the result for Trump has been a remarkable comeback. Trump will clearly go down in the history books as one of the most remarkable politicians in American history for the way that he was able to come back from the disgrace and the defeat of 4 years ago. So what he has managed to do, obviously, is to be, for the second time in American history, you've had a president who lost re-election and was able to get re-elected 4 years later. Only one other person, Grover Cleveland, back in the 19th century, was able to do that. So that's one aspect of the Trump achievement. Secondly, Trump has remodeled the Republican Party, which traditionally was the party of affluent white folk, the bankers and the lawyers, etc. Now he's made it much more multicultural, with appeals to people of color, to women, to the Latinos, etc. He's done brilliantly at reinventing a political party, which he's only recently joined. Remember, he's a New York Democrat, and now he's taken over and remodeled an entirely new political party. And it's interesting that his chief of staff, Susie Wiles, who was his campaign manager, she started in the Republican campaigning mode back in the time of Ronald Reagan, so we're going back 40 years, and she's seen how the Republican Party has been remodeled, and she's been willing to accept all those changes. So it's been amazing. So his second achievement has been remodeling the Republican Party. A third achievement has been the way that he's not only got into the White House, but has also got control of the Senate and possibly will get control of the lower house. So usually Americans will vote one way for the White House and a different way for the Senate and the lower house. This time he scored this clean sweep. So for probably the next 2 years, until what are called the midterm elections in 2 years' time, Trump will have really unlimited power within the United States government. So that is another a major achievement of Donald Trump. He really is a most remarkable figure. Whether or not you like his policies is another matter, but one has to acknowledge talent when you see it.
What's your assessment of how Australian leaders are going to navigate potential tensions with a Trump-led US administration, especially given post-criticisms from figures like the Prime Minister, the US Ambassador, Kevin Rudd?
Yes, this is a real problem because it just shows the risk you run when you think that a politician is down and out, as they obviously were counting on back in 2017, and instead you see Trump bouncing back now. So this is the problem with Albanese, with his earlier comments, and for Kevin Rudd. Now, I've always opposed politicians getting these plump diplomatic appointments. They should go to professional diplomats who know when to keep their mouth shut. Kevin Rudd has, I think, made mistakes while he's been in Washington, D.C., still running as though he were a separate politician, whereas, in fact, he's simply a diplomat. So he's going to cause problems, although I did notice that Trump, when he was challenged on Rudd's comments about him, he made some comment that he wasn't, I think, the brightest bulb or whatever, which some of us would agree with, but also Trump clearly wasn't that worried. Australia, it's a reliable ally. At the end of the day, you can always rely on Australia, even if you have a maverick as ambassador, even though the maverick ambassador may well be tolerated, if not encouraged, by the government back in Canberra. So I don't think that it's going to do any long-term damage to Australia's deep-seated relationship with the United States, although, of course, Trump may require eventually for Rudd to pack his bags, and hopefully the government will then behave sensibly and put in a professional diplomat.
All right, Keith, it was terrific to catch up and get your insights. Exciting next 4 years ahead with Donald Trump in the White House.
We're going to have a lot to talk about, Brent.
Thank you, Keith. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Dr. Keith Suter from Global Directions.